Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. If they hadn't been all over the news of late, you probably wouldn't even know they are there. You wouldn't even give them a second thought. But now, ALPRs are top of mind. ALPRs, of course, are automatic license plate readers. They're on poles and traffic lights capturing key data, including license plate numbers, the date and time of the detection, and the location where the plate was read. In other words, someone knows where your car is, and by extension, you. And that has raised privacy concerns. In a free society, no one wants to feel like they're under surveillance, being tracked. But law enforcement see APLR or ALPRs as technology to keep us safe. And according to Police Chief Magazine, the information these devices collect is immediately checked against real-time databases that include stolen vehicles, wanted persons, Amber Alerts, missing people, and more. So how do you balance public safety with privacy? And how do you prevent the misuse of those devices by those who have access to the data they're collecting, as happened recently at two local police departments? Helping us to learn more about that is Ron Cappriciani, the chief of police for the town of Mooresville, where one of those recent incidents of misuse occurred. There have been another at CMPD, and in both instances, those involved have been disciplined. Chief Cappriciani joins us along with Jay Stanley, senior policy analyst for the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. And Jeff Welty is with us, professor of public law and government at the UNC School of Government. Good morning to you all, and thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. Chief, I'm going to begin with you. Some of the devices that we'll be talking about this hour are made by a company called Flock Safety, which is why recent news reports our listeners have probably heard these automatic license plate readers referred to as flock cameras. But not all of those cameras in use here and elsewhere are made by that company. And in fact, when we invited CMPD to be part of this program, they declined, saying, quote, since CMPD does not have a contract with Flock, it wouldn't make sense for us to partake. That's splitting hairs, of course. To be clear, although the cameras CMPD uses are not Flock-owned, they do have access to Flock camera data. So CMPD is not here, but Ron Cappriciani is with us, the chief of police for the town of Mooresville. Both of your departments had similar instances of misuse of these cameras. Does it make any difference, Chief, who manufactured them in terms of what their capabilities are and how they are used?
No, it really doesn't. I mean, I think Flock, to be honest, was probably the first one out of the gate with these ALPRs. And they started pushing those across. And then other smaller companies, I think, have been following and try to catch up, sort of like body cams and things like that. Axon is the big producer, and there's other spinoffs, but they're pretty much the main thing. And I think that's what happened with Flock. They're just... And again, you're right. We hear it Flock all the time, but he calls them Flock cameras. Well, you're right. They're ALPRs, right? And so there's a bunch of companies, I'm sure, that manufacture these things. I just think Flock probably, my guess would be, is probably the biggest.
Jay Stanley is also with us. He is with the ACLU. And this technology, Jay, is not new. It was first deployed, I believe, in the United Kingdom back in the 1970s to combat terrorism. So how long have they been used in this country? And have the positives, in your opinion, outweighed the negatives?
Yeah, so they really first emerged among police departments in the early 20-teens. We did a big report on the technology in 2013. Flock has definitely brought them to a new level. What we saw in the early years that most police departments would have very localized ALPR systems in which they would own their own cameras and they would collect their data and mostly store it just locally. But what Flock has done is to create a nationwide network or infrastructure through the cloud of these readers so that all the data from every camera, or at least about 75% of them where the customers opt in, the police departments, is all sent to Flock's servers and then is searchable by all the other customers. So any little small town sheriff anywhere in America has this giant surveillance network at their fingertips that, you know, would rival anything that the East German Stasi had or the like. And, you know, I think that Flock is in many ways similar to the other customers, except for this giant network, because they have so many cameras and so many customers, it makes them a much more powerful sort of nationwide network than what their most of their competitors have.
I'm assuming that since you referred to the Stasi in East Germany, that you view these as having more negatives than positives.
Yeah, we worry about the creation of that kind of a surveillance network because it basically creates a record where innocent people who are just living their lives, every location that they're going to, or a lot of them, and sometimes that's very sensitive data about people's medical lives or political lives or sexual lives or religious lives and the like. And why, you know, okay, so the government checks to see if your car is wanted and is on a hot list. If it's not on a hot list, why are they storing information about where you're going and when you're not suspected of any wrongdoing? We feel like that's not the way things are supposed to work in America. And yes, there are successes that law enforcement can tout, but you have to balance that against what it's doing to our privacy.
We're going to talk a lot about privacy here, but let me ask you this from the ACLU's point of view. What's the difference in doing that and the fact that every phone call you make is stored somewhere, every website that you visit is stored somewhere, there's a record of your IP address going to that website somewhere? What's the difference?
Well, this is what we call the leaky boat fallacy, which is the boat is leaking under your seat, so we're not going to worry about the leak that's under my seat. Yes, there are big privacy problems with our internet surfing and with our phone use, and we are tackling those, and we're seeing improvements in those privacy, along that privacy dimension. It used to be that law enforcement could access all your location data from the cell phone carrier without a warrant. But the Supreme Court shot that down. And so just because there are other privacy problems in society doesn't mean we shouldn't worry about this privacy problem.
So, Jeff, people have complained about red light cameras vociferously. Charlotte's had an ongoing on and off love affair with these cameras. Law enforcement likes them. People don't because these are cameras that photograph cars as they go through intersections. They take a picture of your license plate. If you've run the red light, you get a citation in the mail. Area toll lanes also, I think, read your license plate, because if you don't have a transponder, they have to have a way of knowing that you use the lanes and billing you accordingly, and no one seems to care. How are these license plate cameras different, and is the hue and cry about these license plate cameras comparable to what the pushback has been on red light cameras?
From my observation, the pushback on license plate readers is stronger than the pushback on any surveillance technology, really, that I've seen deployed over the last couple of decades. And you see it all across the country. People are really concerned about the privacy implications of what is now, in Flock's case, a network of over 100,000 individual plate readers deployed across the country. So the concern's legit, but I think it's also a technology that has proven to be very effective for law enforcement purposes and for finding missing persons. So there's weighty considerations on both sides, and that's what makes it such an interesting topic.
Chief, is the happy medium responsible use of these cameras? In other words, it's there, it's deployed nationwide, there's a nationwide database, at least with the Flock cameras, people know where you are at all times, or can if they want to. Does it all boil down to control and regulation?
I think it does. You know, and listen, we've been, let's be honest, right? We've been our own worst enemy on this argument, because it's popping up all the time. We had somebody here, you alluded to it, that we had arrest for doing this. Charlotte had the same thing. And across the country, you're seeing it, and that's getting more play now. So, of course, it's about that. And of course, those stories are going to be highlighted, and people are going to go, here we go again, right? And so that's a fight that we understand. And, you know, it's horrible. You know, I wish we could find a perfect system to have police officers that wouldn't do that stuff, but that's not the reality, right? And
Yeah,
all we can do is try to take care of our own, regulate it, and hold people accountable.
to
It's not
remind folks,
the best answer, but it's, that's where we are with that.
To remind folks, both your department and CMPD had instances of individual officers who are accessing the data from these cameras. And in your case, I believe the officer was trying to locate the whereabouts of her ex's spouse, former spouse, or ex. Yeah. How long did it take you, and how did you uncover that misuse, and how were those involved dealt with?
So we had to we do our own checks and balances on those. In addition to, I think Flock has their own system where they will alert us to certain things. We've never been alerted by those, but we have our own system where we go in and we check. We used to try to check it daily, and it just got too big, to be honest with you. It was too hard to do. It was too hard to schedule. So then we went to monthly checks, and we saw something that piqued our interest. We saw that a plate had been run by this officer 31 times, tracked it, and it had different reasons for. Flock has a drop down menu that has a bunch of things you can check, warrant or stolen vehicle or stolen car or motor, whatever it is. There's a whole bunch of things, and she had different things checked off in there. Didn't make a lot of sense to us. So further investigation, we called her in, found out that the plate belonged to her boyfriend's ex-wife. So we had an interview with her, and then after that, she was charged, and we arrested her.
So as I understand it, your department is part of the Flock network of cameras.
Yeah,
is that
yes.
correct? And
yes.
as, how many do you have? How do you normally use them?
So I don't want to get into how many we have, because we do, and that's going to keep increasing, because Mooresville is just growing exponentially, right? And we're getting new places, new areas coming in. We're getting a lot of new subdivisions. And to that fact, I think you mentioned it earlier too, that's the other thing. We're getting a lot of calls from HOAs
that
want to know how do they get a Flock camera? A ton of those have been asking for that.
Well, I read that you have about 10 of these cameras, and you can go on a website and you can see where Flock cameras are deployed across the country, and you can zoom into area networks. I'm not sure how accurate it necessarily is, because it's coming from the Flock company that runs these cameras or owns these cameras. But I think you have a population of about 56,000 people, and it's 25 square miles. Why do you need these?
Well, Flock, the cameras have been a game changer for us. Our location to Charlotte and our location right off 77 has caused a lot of problems for us, as far as, a lot of times they'll get stolen cars out of Charlotte. They'll come up 77, they'll get off, they come in here, they shoplift, they break into car dealerships, they do a whole bunch of things. And that's, we were always sort of behind the eight ball trying to catch up to whoever that was. So in that case, the Flock cameras have been a game changer for us, because we were really getting hammered up here with people getting off the interstate. Hey, it's an away game for them, right? They come up, they get off the interstate, do what they want, hop back on, and they're back in Charlotte. So, and we're chasing our tails with this stuff. It was always after the fact, after the fact. So now, they never use their own cars, really. They'll steal a car, or they'll change a plate or steal a plate, and then they come up here and the Flock cameras go off, and it alerts us, and then we get on them pretty quick.
Ron Campuchiani is the chief of police at the town of Mooresville. He's here with Jay Stanley from the ACLU and Jeff Welty from the UNC School of Government. We'll come back and talk more about privacy concerns with these traffic cameras in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Ron Campuchiani, the chief of police of the town of Mooresville. Jay Stanley is with us, senior policy analyst with the ACLU Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. And Jeff Welty, professor of public law and government at the UNC School of Government. And we're talking about these license plate reading cameras that have been deployed in the local area. CMPD has them. Mooresville has them. Many other local jurisdictions have them. And they are nationwide now. And one company that runs one of these networks of cameras, the Flock company, which is a company that Mooresville uses, has a nationwide database that police departments, even if they don't use Flock cameras, can access. And that has some people concerned about privacy. So, Jay, these cameras capture license plates of every passing vehicle. They record vehicle details like the make, the model, the color, the body style, other unique identifiers. Does it have a bike rack on the front of it? Things like that. Then they provide a GPS location for that vehicle and a timestamp. And I'm told they do not use facial recognition, but occasionally the driver or the passenger or both will be caught in the photograph because they're just in the frame. If you're not guilty of a crime, why should you care? Why should you worry, Jay?
Yeah, well, that's a question that we often hear, and it's a reasonable question. And I think that there's a lot of answers to it. I mean, you're not committing a crime when you sing in the shower, but you don't necessarily want the whole world to hear you. So it's not just about committing crimes. It's about having the authorities monitor your life. And it's also true that you could be caught up even if, you know, into this law enforcement network, even if you haven't done anything wrong, for example, through errors. Flock refuses to let the independent research company IPVM, which is sort of a consumer reports for you know, security data, refuses to let them test the accuracy of their system. And sometimes it just misreads the plates and officers forget to check. And so completely innocent people have found themselves lying on the pavement with an officer pointing their gun at them because of a misread or because of an error in the watch list databases that's behind these cameras. Also, it's important to realize that these are not just taking photographs. They're using AI as well. So Flock has a product in which they sell to law enforcement that says it will look for quote-unquote suspicious movement patterns and alert the police about those. And what we see is that law enforcement will then use a pretext stop, which is basically where they say, oh, you were weaving in the lane or something like that, where the real reason why they want to pull you over is some algorithm has decided that your movements are quote-unquote suspicious and you might be a drug trafficker or a human trafficker. That means anybody is susceptible to a frightening law enforcement encounter because some computer algorithm has decided that they're suspicious. And we have seen people pulled over for this reason. They also use AI analytics so that they have a bunch of photographs, that often which do include the driver, as you said. And a police department can do a search for, say, find me an Asian male wearing a red sweater or the like. And it basically allows fishing expeditions of a type that's never been possible before. So you may think you have nothing to hide and that you're not of interest to law enforcement, but law enforcement and the computer algorithms behind these systems may have other ideas.
Which I guess is why Liz Barber, who is the public policy director at the North Carolina ACLU, says technology needs to be limited to protect people's rights. She says people should not be tracked, followed, cataloged, analyzed by the government without individuals' suspicion. In other words, there should be a reason for you to track them as opposed to just being caught up in the dragnet. Chief, license plate leaders do track, follow, catalog, and analyze every vehicle that they capture. Is that information, if that information does not involve a stolen car or a plate associated with an Amber Alert or some kind of BOLO, what happens to those pictures? What happens to that data?
Well, Flock keeps that data, they say, for 30 days. But, you know, we've put in safeguards also. And I think the laws have changed over the last few years to also allow that. We talked about, I'll get to your question, but we've also talked about misreads and mistakes and things like that. And that was a concern. It was a concern for us. We made sure early on that our policies reflected that we did a check before we go out and run down a car that said it's a stolen car or something we chase and we're getting people out of gun points, like you mentioned, because Flock is a third. It's almost like, you know, with DCI, which runs the plates, we get it through the FBI. It goes directly from them to us. It's a straight line. You have Flock now in here. It's almost like a pyramid. So it would go. So the information would go now. The Flock would pick up on a car and send the information and come over to us. I never liked that third wheel in there, not without a double check. So we did that years ago. I mean, we've had flock cameras down for about 5 or 6 years. We put that in there right away because I didn't like a third party vendor sort of or anything, a third party being involved in that loop, and there could be misread. So I said, we're going to pump the brakes on this stuff. Instead of being so quick to get out there, let's make sure the information is accurate. Now I think that's become a standard protocol, but we started doing that very early on for those reasons that you talked about. I didn't like the fact that there could be mistakes, not with the stuff that we're dealing with here.
So, Jeffrey, Liz Barber makes the point. She's with the ACLU. She makes the point that just as law enforcement cannot put a tracker on your car without a warrant, they shouldn't be able to log into a computer and track you and get that same information about where you are that they would be able to get from placing a tracker without a warrant. There's no warrant with these traffic light cameras. These license plate cameras are getting everybody all the time. Does she have a point? Are there protections if in the law, if that does not happen?
She's got a point. The general rule is that when we're out and about in public spaces and on the public roads, our identity, the kind of car that we're driving, all that readily observable information is not private. We've made it public by choosing to drive around. However, the Supreme Court, in a series of cases, has said that when law enforcement is tracking our location over a protracted period of time, that intrudes on our personal privacy and might violate the Fourth Amendment. So the legal question that's been litigated a number of places around the country is whether this network of flock cameras is so dense that it really allows for the functional equivalent of location tracking over time, or whether it just kind of intermittently captures whoever happens to drive by the places that there happens to be a camera. And so far, the courts have said it's the latter. That it's just collecting publicly available information. But almost all those decisions, the courts have said, well, we could reach a tipping point. There might come a day when there are enough cameras in a particular location that it amounts to location tracking, and then maybe we would require a warrant. So at least what the courts have said is we're not there yet, but we could be if enough cameras are deployed.
Outside of the protections of the Fourth Amendment, which protects privacy in your home and your papers and your digital data from unreasonable government intrusion, has there ever been any expectation of privacy in public spaces like roads and sidewalks and grocery stores?
Not in any particular moment in time, right? When we go to the grocery store, there might be a law enforcement officer sitting in the parking lot and they're able to observe us. And if we've got an outstanding warrant or we're driving a stolen car, well, by driving to the store, we've made our identity available to that law enforcement officer. The question really is whether there's some kind of network or mosaic effect where it's more than just the chance that you might drive by an officer or somebody might see you if you go out and about. It's something that's comprehensive, that's a system of surveillance. And that's where the courts have said, oh, we've got to draw a line somewhere. We're not going to allow persistent location tracking over time without a court-approved warrant.
Jay, most people who watch any crime shows on television or in the movies see police using CCTV cameras all the time to track down suspects who have committed crimes. And usually the people watching those shows are all for it because it's going to crack down on crime, it's going to lessen the amount of crime. These license plate cameras are not dissimilar to that. Is the real problem the potential for abuse, and have these cameras been abused to any great degree?
Yes, I mean, as we discussed a little bit, we've seen a lot of abuse by individual officers. We've also seen throughout history and a little bit in the present time, abuse by entire departments. You'd have to ask, what would J. Edgar Hoover have done with this system? I wrote a piece about a jurisdiction that started using these to track a person who had written an op-ed critical of his local police department. And, one of the things that we say is when you build a giant mass surveillance infrastructure like this, it's going to be abused. It's inevitably going to be abused. It gives too much power without enough commensurate checks and balances to the government. And so we have seen all the individual abuses, and I congratulate the chief on his enforcement efforts. But there are 14 to 16,000 law enforcement agencies. This is a big country across the nation, and a lot of them are probably not going to have put in place the managerial checks and balances or do the enforcement. And while there have been a number of individual abuses that have surfaced, we just don't know how big the iceberg is below the waterline. We don't know how many things are going uncaught. And so to return to your earlier question, you may think you haven't done anything wrong and you're of no interest to law enforcement, but I'm sure that that woman's boyfriend's ex-wife didn't have anything in her criminal background to worry about, and yet she was being tracked. And so I think that, a city needs to ask themselves, if we could hire 1,000 police officers and have them sitting on corners all around our community, writing down notes on every time you drive by and what car you are and how many passengers you have and what bumper stickers you have on your car 24/7, would you want the law enforcement to do that if it was very, very cheap? And that's basically what this system does.
Chief, police have a lot of tools at their disposal now, including in some jurisdictions, drones with cameras that they use to track both the suspects in vehicles and suspects on foot. We did a whole program about this with Jay and Jeff back in November with certain police departments, and I believe Mooresville uses drones as well. And now you have these license plate cameras. You've had them for about 5 years, you said. As new technologies come on board, in many cases, they all bring up privacy concerns. Is that something that law enforcement in general considers as they decide whether or not to adopt these new technologies? And as they deploy them and control their use, is that top of mind?
For me, it is, right? I can't speak for every police department in the city. I would hope in the country, I hope they would be. We always balance those concerns and what the benefits are to public safety and then the risk to people. And we're hearing a lot of drones. We started our drone program here with a lot of same concerns, right? Are they going to be flying over my house and watching my kids in a pool and things like that? I understand all that. But, let me just say something, because I think this is a great discussion to have. This may knock Jay off his chair, but I'm glad he's here. I'm glad the ACLU is involved in this. And I think this is a discussion because stuff is moving so fast. Technology is moving so quickly that we need to have these discussions about we're not trying to, violate people's rights. We're just the opposite. We're trying to help people here. There's bad actors in police departments, like I said in the beginning, that causes these problems and causes the concerns and gives those arguments. But there, I think there's a path forward here and what that looks like. And I think this is going to be, especially with these flock cameras, I think is going to be an issue that's going to keep going and going and going, where it's eventually going to land again on the Supreme Court to make some decisions here. And I think those decisions are needed to be done. But I think everybody needs to come to the table. I don't think any side should be dismissive of the other one. There's basically, public safety. This is an interesting argument, right? Public safety and flock cameras, I can tell you, have saved lives. They've saved a ton of lives. So you can't dismiss that. And also on the other end of it, you can't dismiss the people's, what the ACLU is bringing up and people in general about, hey, I don't want to be out there being tracked. We're getting into a new age here, where everybody is under surveillance. We've talked about that cameras, your phones. You, Mike, you mentioned in the beginning, right? Your phone. I just came back from New Bern all weekend, and I was up. I think I was there an hour, and I started getting things on Instagram going, hey, things for you to do in New Bern. I'm like, come on, right? So I get it. This is a discussion that's not going to end with us, but I think it's fascinating, and it's absolutely one that needs to be had.
Yeah, we're Absolutely. Being tracked by everything. We don't even think about it anymore. And they're having a debate over these cameras right now in Macon County, North Carolina, where the county just voted unanimously not to renew a contract with Flock for the 12 cameras that have been in operation there. One citizen who spoke at the county commission meeting there said, quote, to tell you the truth, I love my mother, but I'm 45. I don't want my mother to know exactly where I am at every single moment of the day. I love my government, but I don't trust you as much as I trust my mother. but our phones track us wherever we go. Our internet searches are recorded and are traceable to our IP addresses. It is said that Wi-Fi now has the ability to locate wherever you are in your home. Well, it has to, because if you have a device on your person using the Wi-Fi, it has to know how to reach it. There are cameras in ATMs that we use. There are cameras in every store. There are Ring and Nest cameras on front doors throughout America in every neighborhood. No one complains. I don't believe there are any laws governing what happens to the material that these cameras record, Jeff. Is privacy a thing of the past? Have we already lost the battle over the concerns we're talking about today, Jeff?
It's a great question. And let me start by saying it's true that our cell phones track us much more comprehensively and accurately than license plate readers ever can. The difference, of course, is that that's data that we're voluntarily relinquishing. It's going to a private company, not the government. And under current Supreme Court precedent, before the government can go get that information from Verizon or T-Mobile, they've got to get a warrant from a court supported by probable cause. What's different about these Flock cameras is that it's being done at the government's direction. It's being collected into a database that law enforcement can access without a warrant for any law enforcement purpose under North Carolina law. So it's very broad. Now, you've highlighted that there's private equivalence to some of these police surveillance technologies, and that's absolutely true. And we see that in the, you know, we see law enforcement increasingly purchasing data from the private sector about criminal suspects. And you can imagine a world where a private network of cameras doesn't raise any Fourth Amendment concerns because it's not the government, but that government could access it by purchasing that data. So the kind of confluence between public sector surveillance and private sector surveillance is a really interesting emerging area. But under current precedent, the fact that our cell phone tracking is done privately, Flock cameras are public, is an important legal distinction.
And I would imagine this is another instance of where technology is outpacing the law. And we can talk about that when we come back with Jeff Welty, professor of public law and government at UNC's School of Government, Jay Stanley, senior policy analyst with the ACLU Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project, and Ron Camperciani, chief of police of the town of Mooresville. We're coming right back.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and United Way of Greater Charlotte. Celebrating 95 years, United Way of Greater Charlotte supports education, financial stability, health, and essential services. Details at UnitedWayGreaterCLT.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about license plate cameras and concerns revolving around the data they collect and the privacy concerns therein. For years, law enforcement, Jeff, law enforcement agencies have used these license plate readers on city-controlled roads or county-controlled roads. And there was a pilot program for them to be deployed on state-controlled roads, which has now become more than a pilot program. It's been written into the law, allowing them to do that because the latest budget bill contains that information, authorizing the Department of Transportation to deploy these cameras in state rights of way. Should we be any more concerned as a result, given all the things we've been talking about?
Well, you're absolutely right. And just as a tiny bit of background, North Carolina is among the about one-third of the 50 states that has laws directly regulating the use of license plate readers. And for a long time, there was no clear authorization to use them on state-maintained roadways, which is about 75 or 80% of all the roads in North Carolina. So they were used on city-maintained roads by local departments, but there really wasn't authority to deploy them on state-maintained roads. Now there is, so that obviously multiplies the potential locations where the cameras can be deployed. That's a process that'll be overseen by the State Department of Transportation along with the State Bureau of Investigation. And they're supposed to report annually to the legislature about how many cameras they've deployed and how it's going, what policies they've adopted regarding their use. But I mean, sort of depending on which side of it you tend towards, either this is an opportunity to be a much greater force multiplier for law enforcement because there's more places that we can catch stolen vehicles and folks with outstanding warrants, or it's a potential for a greater privacy intrusion because instead of 25% of the roadways being potentially subject to tracking, and now it's more like 100%.
I would imagine that we've talked a lot about the concerns of misuse by law enforcement and by government of the information being collected, but this stuff sits in a database and it's nationally available. What about outside actors, people who are not part of law enforcement? How concerned are you, Jeff, about the safety and the security of the data being collected and stored and how it might be used by bad actors who are not part of government or law enforcement?
It's a good question. I mean, I can't speak to the technical security measures that Flock or any of the other companies that operate in this space follow. I think what they'd probably say if they were here is that they keep the data locked up as best they can, and that the sort of backup is their retention period is relatively short, right? How long they keep it. Flock has recently announced a change from a default of 30-day retention of data to a 7-day retention period, although that's configurable depending on the customer agency, right? The customer agency can ask for a longer period and Flock will follow that. But that limits the risk a little bit. I think that the kind of limitations on retention, of course, privacy advocates would like to see even much shorter retention periods than that.
Jay Stanley is with the ACLU. Following 9/11, we discovered that one of the weaknesses in our law enforcement system throughout the country was the lack of an inability to share information among agencies. These Flock cameras and have this national network of data that people can access or law enforcement can access, whether they're a member of the Flock thing or not. Is that a good thing or a bad thing from your point of view? Is it making us safer potentially by allowing this to happen, Jay?
From our point of view, it's a bad thing. It is an enormous government power to be able to track a vehicle and see anywhere in the United States that it has been. And it's not about 9/11 or that kind of thing. This is about much, much smaller game than that. And what we're seeing across the country is that a lot of people are looking on a website like called DFlock, which is a crowdsourced tracker of where the cameras are. They're seeing that there's a camera very near their house. And I think it feels very personal to them in a way that sort of, you know, data sharing between the NSA and the Defense Intelligence Agency or what have you is much more abstract. And so we are seeing an uprising against Flock cameras around the country, the likes of which I've never really seen in my 20 plus year career as a privacy advocate. People are showing up angry at meetings around the country. They're demanding the end of Flock contracts and other ALPR contracts. And I think what's going on here is that, as you said, the technology is just moving so fast. It's giving new powers to the government, to law enforcement, that government's never had in all of human history before. And there just isn't a societal consensus that this is okay. But police departments and government are rushing in and they're deploying it. And big AI companies are rushing in deploying these things before they are really socially acceptable. Before we reach sort of a societal agreement, okay, this is what we think is okay for our neighborhoods, for our communities to be. It's okay for them to be tracked minutely. That's why we're seeing vandalism against Flock cameras all around the country, and which nobody condones, but it's a reflection of just how deep the feelings run about this kinds of surveillance. And it's easy to be, throw your hands up and say, well, there's cell phones and there's cameras and everything like that. But there has been this rush to deploy all this technology, and people do over time push back against it. And so we've seen, you know, in the Middle Ages, kings were reading letters, and when a telegram was first invented, they were reading everybody's telegrams. It takes time for the privacy gravity to kick back in and for people to reassert their rights. And I think that's what we're starting to see here with all the controversy about Flock.
So these Flock cameras have collected data from across the country, and that data is available to law enforcement chief across the country. I'm curious how often the city of Mooresville, the town of Mooresville's police department, accesses data from other jurisdictions through this network, and whether or not you can control access to the data you collect from people outside your jurisdiction.
So we can't control who's going to log into our cameras or track our data. We don't track data from outside other agencies unless we have an investigation that we believe we're going to need to do that. We had one a couple of years ago where there was a group going across North Carolina, robbing, I believe it was pharmacies, and we ended up getting them here through a flock hit because they were taking the plates off the cars when they got into a municipality and then robbing these people at gunpoint and then getting out of there again. We caught them here. So we only do it when there's a need or there's an investigation that we believe we would need to look at. I just want to say one other thing to Jay's point. There's an uprising they talk about, but and I understand that, and that gets all the publicity, and it gives the appearance that there's this people are out, which they are, right? But I think it gives a false sense there that there's more going on, there's more people out there that are upset about this than not. And it's easy to make that argument because that's all you hear from. But you're not hearing from the number of HOAs, like I talked about in the beginning, that have these cameras, that want them, that believe it's a help to them, because they don't come to these meetings. They don't pound their fists and say, we need to keep these, right? You're hearing from the other half. So I mean that they fill the room, and the loudest voice sometimes is what you listen to, but doesn't necessarily mean that that's the voice of that's the majority of what's going on.
You have access as a police department to the data stored and collected in these flock camera in this flock camera network. Do HOAs who deploy these as private entities or stores who perhaps have these license plate readers in their parking lots, are they do they have access to that same database?
I would think, as the customer for Flock, let's say, I would think they could ask Flock to give them the data. They're the customer. I mean, that would be an answer. That would be a question for Flock to answer. They're
I
the
don't know
customer.
why I don't know why I feel this way, Jeff, but I feel that hopefully law enforcement departments have thought about this. It's clear that Chief Campriciani has thought about this, has been very thoughtful about the deployment and use of these cameras, and he's taken action where there has been misuse of these cameras and has been open and honest about it. He didn't shy away from it. But HOAs are a whole different ball of wax. Are there any laws governing the legal and privacy implications of HOAs deploying and using these cameras?
Yeah. Well, let me first say that state law requires that any law enforcement agency that uses these license plate readers do so pursuant to a policy that addresses who can access the data, training and supervision, and all that kind of stuff. So law enforcement's not just kind of going into it wide open. There's got to be some deliberation and thought about it. But with regard to the private cameras and HOAs and so forth, the short answer to your question is no. Our state law imposes some limits on how long law enforcement can retain plate data. It limits the purposes for which law enforcement can access plate data, but it only applies to law enforcement. It doesn't apply to private operators. And likewise, the constitutional concerns that we talked about, those relate to government access to plate information. They don't relate to private access to plate information. So an HOA could, in theory, collect plate data on everybody that comes into and out of the neighborhood and keep it forever and use it for any purpose that they want to use it for. So that is not regulated. And I mean, that's maybe somewhat typical of private surveillance. There's no regulation about a 7-Eleven's ability to run a surveillance camera on all the customers that come into the
Right.
store. They can do that
I
because they're the
want
property owner and there's no sort of state control of that.
Jay
Yeah,
of
one
the
of the things
ACL.
that
Go ahead, Jay. Go ahead.
Sorry, just on that point, one of the things that we have seen, I think it was Arizona and places, is that there have been big fights within HOAs because some members do not want these cameras up. And there are often questions about how the HOA president and the HOA boards can actually look at all of their neighbors' comings and goings, who's getting visitors at 2 a.m. and the like. And so that has made a lot of people very upset. And and I take the chief's point that there's, he's saying there's basically a silent majority of people who do support these cameras. And I wasn't saying that everybody opposes the cameras. I was saying there's a lack of consensus here. There's a lack of sort of societal legitimacy. They're so new, and we haven't sort of digested them as a country.
Which concerns the ACLU more, the private use of these cameras in businesses and in neighborhoods, or the official government use of these cameras?
Well, your HOA can't put you in jail the way your police department can. So we always worry about the government first and foremost. And again, it's because there's this national network that makes it such a powerful thing. And the way that works is that you as a police department can decide whether or not you want to have the ability to do a nationwide search of everybody's data or just search your own cameras. And if you want to search the ability to search nationwide, you have to contribute to the pool. You have to allow other police departments around the country to search your local data. And so Flock says that about 75% of their customers have opted into that nationwide search. So I think if you're somebody in the community who is concerned about these cameras, that's the first question to ask. Is our police department participating in that nationwide sharing system, or have they opted out and they're only searching their local data?
So Jay just said, Chief, that your HOA can't arrest you, but he did point out that the president of the HOA or somebody on the board of directors can look at these cameras and keep track of what their neighbors are doing, who's coming and going in the middle of the night, which has its own concerns. And it's very, not unlike what you experienced in Mooresville with the officer that you let go as a result of misusing the system. But he makes the point that they have to come to you. The purpose of putting up these cameras, it seems to me, in these neighborhoods is to track the comings and goings of bad actors who might be breaking into cars in the middle of the night or doing something else like that. They have to come to police, don't they, with that data to get any satisfaction?
Yeah, they would notify us, and then obviously we would go out there if it was something that either take a report or they're having problems. They've got some cars speeding through there all the time, then we would go out. I mean, for us, I haven't seen much more than that on these HOA cameras. I think there's a sense when they get those that they feel safer, you know, what they're doing with it. Like we talked about, I have no idea. But, you know, as far as, and I don't want to say something here that's going to, everybody's going to jump on and say, oh, the chief agreed with that. But to your point about, you know, getting access to other departments' cameras and other areas and things like that, I get Jay's point. I think it's well taken. Maybe that's something that we have to look at. Like I said, I think bringing everybody together is important, right? But I think the reason that is for us, for investigative purposes, is we find there's so many crimes now that cross boundaries. People just don't stay in their own areas. There's these organized retail theft groups that go all up and down the East Coast, and I'm sure the rest of the country is having problems with them too. We've got them coming up from Atlanta. Charlotte's being hit by them, everything. So one of the things that for a law enforcement tool is that tracking of those, you know, organized retail theft groups. And there's a bunch of other things. There's car groups that do the same things. They steal cars. They come in, they're taking converters off of cars, and these things are ending up in Atlanta. They're ending up in LA. They're ending up all over the place. So crime, unfortunately, is not just in one area anymore. It goes nationally, it goes transnationally, right? So, does that require a warrant to tap another thing? I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a good talking point. I don't know. I think I don't want to suggest that. And then I'm on the hook for saying even this chief agrees that. I'm just saying it's a talking point that I think is a good talking point to have.
So the ACLU, Jeff, is very concerned about these for legitimate reasons, their misuse and overuse and becoming a surveillance system for the national government and for local governments as well. It seems to me that the key to this is law and regulation. Are there people working toward that end at any level of government to get a handle on this? Because the technology has outpaced the law. And I have about 30 seconds.
Yes, people are working on that at every level of government. There are bills in Congress right now that would address license plate readers. In many state legislatures, there are bills that would regulate license plate readers. Folks are considering things like what is the proper retention period, who should be allowed to access these systems, and for what purposes. And then the $64,000 question that courts may address in the future is, should there be a warrant requirement or some similar court approval process before law enforcement can access them? That would be a game changer in this area, and that's the big question that we'll be looking at.
And you get the last word. Jeff Welty is a professor of public law and government at the UNC School of Government. Jay Stanley joins us, senior policy analyst with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project, and Ron Kemperciani, the chief of police in the town of Mooresville. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah Dalia. Our producer is Chris Jones. Additional production assistance by Emmy Berger. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to visit past episodes, or to sign up for the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.